The opening scene of Parashat Shmini is both brief and dramatic. It depicts the final day of the dedication of the Mishkan, the very day on which Nadav and Avihu die. The reader encounters a terse description, and the verses tell us as follows. Now Aharon's sons, Nadav and Avihu, each took his fire pan, put fire in it, and laid incense. And they offered before God strange fire, which God had not enjoined upon them. And the fire came forth from God and consumed them, and they died before God. The death of Nadav and Avihu is shocking and leaves us puzzled. Why did they die? What sin did they commit that deserves death? Even if they sinned, was death the appropriate punishment? Why? The reason for the death is not sufficiently clear from the verses themselves. Was it because of the strange fire? What was strange about it, and why did it deserve death? The description is shrouded in ambiguity, practically inviting interpretive intervention. Vayikra Rabba offers a long list of reasons for the deaths of Nadav and Avihu, a series of improper behaviors that serve on one level or another as a justification for their punishment and death. One cluster of reasons offered by the sages relates to the improper conduct of Nadav and Avihu towards the established leadership. For example, one midrash looks backward, focusing on a defining moment during the revelation at Mount Sinai, the moment of the covenant. The midrash describes the event as follows. And to Moshe God said, "Come up to God, you and Aaron, Nadav and Avihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and bow low from afar. Moshe alone shall come near God." Vayikra Rabba offers a homiletical reading of these verses from Exodus and says as follows. And to Moshe God said, "Come up to God." This teaches that Moshe and Aaron walked first with Nadav and Avihu walking behind them, and all of Israel behind them. And Nadav and Avihu would say, "When will these two old men die, so that we may exercise leadership over the community?" In a surprising turn, the Midrash reads these verses as an act of defiance by Nadav and Avihu, defiance towards their uncle Moshe and their father Aharon. Even in the midst of the revelation at Sinai, Nadav and Avihu are preoccupied with their place in the hierarchy of power. They were so certain that the mantle of leadership was destined for them that they viewed the two old men, Moshe and Aaron, merely as obstacles to their own realization of power. They were so impatient that they actually hoped for the death of their own father and uncle. This blunt and inappropriate behavior towards leadership, towards their family members, and towards those whom they should have been subordinate to, eventually spills over into their relationship with the Holy One, blessed be He. And the Midrash tells us as follows. Rabbi Tanchuma said, "This teaches that they uncovered their heads, grew haughty in their hearts, and feasted their eyes upon the Shechinah, the Divine Presence." The two are described as acting with extreme arrogance and insolence. They uncover their heads, a sign of lack of awe, adopted an attitude of haughtiness, and did not hesitate to derive an improper pleasure by gazing directly and inappropriately at the Divine Presence. The second cluster of Midrashim focuses on improper behavior specifically at the moment the priests approach their sacred work. These points are brought in the name of Rabbi Levi, who notes that regarding these specific behaviors, the penalty of death is explicitly written. The first behavior is intoxication. Because they were intoxicated by wine, and death is written regarding this, "Drink no wine or other intoxicants, you and your sons with you, when you enter the tent of meeting, that you may not die. It is a law for all time throughout the ages. The second behavior is missing garments. Because they were missing the required garments, and death is written regarding this. And for Aharon's sons also you shall make tunics, and make sashes for them, and make turbans for them, for dignity and adornment, and make for them linen breeches to cover their nakedness. They shall be worn by Aharon and his sons when they enter the tent of meeting, lest they incur guilt and die. It shall be a law for all time, for him and for his offspring after him. The third example is lack of ritual washing, and the Midrash says as follows. Because they entered without washing their hands and feet, as it is written, when they enter the tent of meeting, they shall wash with water. In the verses commanding the construction of the laver in the Mishkan, it says, Aharon and his sons shall wash their hands and feet from it. It appears that the author of this Midrash imagines the sons of Aharon entering the Holy of Holies drunk, uncovered, and in some way physically or ritually unclean. In all these verses, the command is directed specifically towards the son of Aharon, not just Aharon himself or the priesthood in general. In each instance, it is noted that this is a law for all time and throughout the ages. In each, the danger of failing to fulfill the command is explicitly stated as death. Furthermore, all the behaviors in this list are centered on the body. Drunkenness, which is a failure to properly manage what enters the body. Nakedness, meaning exposing the body in a way deemed inappropriate. And lack of washing, which is a failure to care for the exterior of the body, a lack of physical or ritual cleanliness. We are presented here with behaviors that reflect a lack of clarity of mind and physical purity, a deficiency that manifests as disrespect and a certain lightheartedness, kalut rosh. It is worth noting that these behaviors, drunkenness, nakedness, bad hygiene, are inappropriate not only in a sacred space, but in general society as well. It seems that according to Rabbi Levi, proper conduct in the sanctuary is an extension or a more rigorous application of the proper conduct that reflects human dignity as a whole. A third cluster of midrashim focuses on and broadens the improper behavior within the family context, and in a broader sense within a social and moral framework. And the Midrash says as follows, because they had no children, and death is written regarding this. As it says, in Nadav and Avihu died. The verses upon which this Midrash rests relate as follows. And Nadav and Avihu died before God when they offered strange fire before God in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. And Eleazar and Itamar served as priests in the presence of Aharon, their father. At first glance, the verse explains why Eleazar and Itamar were chosen to replace their brothers in the Mishkan service. However, the Midrash chooses to read the words, and they had no children, as a cause for the death of Nadav and Avihu, rather than just a description of Aharon's family tree. While the Midrash does not explicitly explain why the two had no offspring, it may be linked to the subsequent statement. Abba Chanin says, it was because they had no wives, as it is written, and he shall make atonement for himself and for his house. His house refers to his wife. Beyond the literal claim that Nadav and Avihu were unmarried, this Midrash forges a profound link between atonement and the home. This connection suggests that atonement is most effective when it is not a selfish endeavor. Atonement is truly worthy when it is sought by the individual not just for themselves, but for their kin and their loved ones. The critique of Nadav and Avihu takes on an additional, particularly sharp dimension in the following Midrash. Rabbi Levi says they were arrogant. Many women remained anchored, waiting for them. What would Nadav and Avihu say? Our father's brother is a king, Moshe. Our mother's brother is a prince, Nachshon ben Aminadav. Our father is a high priest, and we are the two deputies of the priesthood. What woman is worthy of us? In this reading, which imagines the women waiting to marry them, the hubris of the two brothers is depicted as a barrier for their human connection. Their elitism creates a wake of heartache and human suffering. The abundance of reasons offered by the Midrash testifies to the possibility of understanding the sin of Aaron's sons in a broad, multifaceted way. Yet, inherently, it also testifies to the profound difficulty of extracting a cause of death from the verses themselves. This very multiplicity also leaves us with the impression that we are standing before an unexplained, perhaps even arbitrary, death. The authors of the Midrashim seem to share our emotional and moral pain standing in front of an unexplained death, which leads them to a set of possible explanations, at times only loosely related to the text itself. In other words, the Midrash possesses two contradictory faces. On the one hand, it offers a specific claim about the cause of death, including clear, principled stances on sin and its punishment. On the other hand, the sheer volume of explanations leaves us without a real explanation, questioning the nature of this death. In the end, the Midrashim leave us questioning what stands behind this death, and with a feeling that it may not have a single comprehensive explanation. Thus, the Midrash affirms a profound human experience. In the face of death, there is not always a good explanation for it. May we have a Shabbat in life and Shalom.